And now a look at local and statewide news. A fire broke out on Sargent Drive on Sunday morning, close to Mission Road, where it passes under Near Island Bridge. According to Fire Chief Mike Milligan, the fire decimated an outbuilding on private property just 10 feet away from the main house. City firefighters reached the residence 4 minutes after being dispatched to find a 20-foot by 30-foot workshop aflame.
We had fire showing out the windows and vented through the roof, which means that it was a fully involved structure fire.
The closest fire hydrant turned out to be frozen, Milligan says. Fire engines carry their own water, but not enough to fully put out a fire of that size. On top of that, he says, snow, ice, and the tight roads in that area made it difficult to maneuver.
We were able to eventually establish water supply off of Marine Way and also called Bayside in for a tender, a water tender, to feed my engine that was closest to the fire. And between the two of them, we were able to keep the fire from getting to the primary residence, but the building itself is a total loss.
Finding a fire hydrant frozen can be a problem during colder winters like this one, Milligan says. Even so, snaking a hose up the hill from a hydrant on Marine Way and calling in backup water supply only caused a 5-minute delay, he estimates. The fire was declared put out about an hour after firefighters arrived on scene. The main house was left untouched and no people were hurt, Milligan says. The cause of the fire is still under investigation. With more snow on the way and cold, icy conditions expected to continue, Milligan warns residents to make sure their smoke alarms are working. He says to have an exit plan that you have practiced and to make sure that all exit points are clear of snow and ice. Starting in October, if you want to fly on a commercial flight anywhere in the United States, you will need a federally compliant real ID or an official alternative like a passport. Getting one of those IDs can be burdensome. It requires a lot of documentation and lines at the DMV can last 3 hours or longer. And that's if your community has a DMV in the first place. As KOTZ's Wesley Early reports, lawmakers and state officials haven't figured out how to help rural Alaskans get their IDs.
Many, if not most, rural residents will need access to flights for medical appointments or emergencies at some point.
In case of life-threatening emergencies, patients are often medevaced to Anchorage or Seattle, and once they get better and are able to return home, they'll have to take a regular flight back home. So all these scenarios happen routinely and will require that patients have a compliant ID by October 1st under the current act.
That's Jacqueline Bergstrom, Executive Director of Medical Services for the Tanana Chiefs Conference. Bergstrom is concerned that if villagers can't get real IDs, they may get stranded after medical flights. State lawmakers in the House Tribal Affairs Committee heard testimony Thursday from Bergstrom and other rural Alaska leaders who were concerned about getting real IDs for their communities and want lawmakers to help. Melanie Banke is the CEO of Kowarik, a tribal consortium in the Bering Straits region.
I do think it's the legislature's job to appropriate funding to ensure that every village in the state of Alaska has somebody going to their community at least once and providing that as an opportunity versus a community of 800 people trying to fly into Nome to obtain their real ID.
Even if a village could organize flying everyone who wanted a real ID to the nearest hub DMV, it would be expensive. Round-trip tictickets from surrounding villages to Kotzebue can cost as much as $600. Charlie Nelson is vice president and tribal affairs head for Manilik Health Consortium based in the Northwest Arctic Borough. He says Kotzebue's DMV hours are very limited since the one person who works there also works as an admin for the local police department. Oh, and also, it's closed on Wednesdays for road tests.
DMV office is only open for 4 hours a day. When that person is out sick or has other issues, personal and or business, it is usually closed, so we don't have any direct access to it on a full-time need.
The state has been trying to solve this problem for a while now without much success so far. Last year, it put out a pitch for Alaskans to donate to the State Department of Motor Vehicles to get workers out to rural communities, though they've since ditched that idea. Then there's a state mobile DMV pilot program that's been going through villages to help get tribal members signed up, though it's not always on the state's dime. Now, the state has been pushing for residents to use alternatives to the real ID when the deadline hits. Those include passports, military IDs, and federally recognized tribal IDs with photos. With the October deadline looming, Representative Tiffany Zolkowski of Bethel, who chairs the House Tribal Affairs Committee, told the DMV representative at the hearing that the department should be more proactive in explaining Real ID alternatives to tribes.
If it's being shared with a group of legislators, it seems like it could be shared as a letter to a Dear Tribal Leader letter, so people know what opportunities there are to meet other standards, specifically if the department is relying on tribal IDs as an alternative option, but something to consider moving forward.
One more wrinkle is that even with the tribal IDs, tribal officials are concerned that the local TSA officials have not all been trained properly on recognizing the various forms of acceptable IDs. Additionally, Banky with Kowarik says just because someone is an enrolled tribal member of a tribe, it doesn't mean they live there.
I don't want to be stranded somewhere and just thinking that the TSA officer is going to accept my native village of Savunga issued tribal ID. I'm a state citizen and I should have the access to state issued real ID.
Including the alternatives, the state DMV estimates that about 6,700 rural Alaskans who don't have a DMV in their community still need help with getting an ID. Calls made to the state DMV office concerning state outreach went unanswered as of this report. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
Signature gathering for the campaign to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy has officially started. On Friday, the State Elections Division delivered the booklets that Recall Dunleavy organizers will use. After receiving the booklets at the division's Anchorage office, organizers mailed out some 60 packages to recall supporters around the state to start gathering signatures. The campaign must gather more than 71,000 signatures to hold the recall election. The recall organizers gathered more than 46,000 over 5 weeks to apply for the recall, but to get the recall on the ballot, they will have to start from zero. The recall campaign already has a list of 44 different places across the state where supporters will be able to sign the petition. They range from Ukiagvik on the North Slope to Prince of Wales Island and Ketchikan in Southeast, and they include a cross-section of businesses and interest groups frustrated by Dunleavy's agenda. There's a store in the Southeast Island community of Angoon whose owner voted for Dunleavy but says he's been devastated by cuts that the governor approved for the state ferry system. There's an Anchorage coffee shop as well as a Union Hall in Fairbanks, Palmer, and Juneau. Campaign kickoff events are scheduled for cities next weekend. Organizers have rented out Sullivan Arena in Anchorage, the Carlson Center in Fairbanks, and Centennial Hall in Juneau. Campaign manager Claire Pywell says that the effort will have roving signature gatherers along with the stationary sites.
We want it to be easy, so when someone's leaving the house, right, or they're taking the kids to, you know, gymnastics, or they're going to the grocery store later, they can just go to the website and look up where they could reliably find a signature gatherer and go and get it done.
Pywell spoke from the Costco in Anchorage, where she was buying hundreds of pens for signature gatherers. Recall organizers have said they want to hold the election as soon as possible. To ensure a special election before August 18th primary, they must submit their petitions before April 20th. The recall could still be stopped if the Alaska Supreme Court overrules a Superior Court decision that allows the campaign to move forward. Oral arguments in the case are scheduled for late next month. Well, it's happened again. Officials say they rescued five Italian tourists from the bus on Saturday. Yes, that's the old Fairbanks City bus abandoned near Denali National Park that was made infamous by adventurer Christopher McCandless and Into the Wild, the book that John Krakauer wrote about McCandless after his death. A local fire chief told the Anchorage Daily News that rescuers were called to a spot on the Stampede Trail about 2 miles from the bus around 8 a.m. on Saturday. After snow machining there, they treated one of the Italian hikers for non-life-threatening cold exposure, the newspaper reported. The bus where McCandless lived and starved to death in 1992 has developed a seemingly magnetic appeal for tourists and adventurers since the 1997 publication of Into the Wild and a film adaptation a decade later. There were 15 search and rescue operations related to the bus between 2009 and 2017, according to state troopers. And last summer, a woman from Belarus died as she tried to cross the Teklinika River with her husband on their way back from spending 2 nights at the bus. The National Archives and Records Administration facility in Seattle is slated to close. It warehouses federal documents obtained from states across the Northwest, and is especially important for the youngest one in the bunch, Alaska, since many landmark decisions were made just a half century ago. So much of our recent history is from the state's federal territory days. Reporter Elizabeth Jenkins takes us inside the State Archives and Museum, where staff are already making do with an incomplete history.
Examining microfilm can be a tedious task, but Steve Hendrickson doesn't see it that way. For him, it's like being on a quest.
I really enjoy the process of doing research. I like that a lot better than writing up the findings, you know, to tell you the truth.
The sound of this machine is from the Alaska State Library Archives and Museum in Juneau, which contains newspapers and trade magazines, but not the federal documents Hendrickson is often looking for. Documents that help him create descriptions of the museum's exhibits and dig up colorful facts. One time he found the report card of a famous Alaska artist. For an historian, that's like hitting the jackpot.
I hope that none of my report cards from my early career have ended up in the National Archives. But I guess that's what they say when something's going on your permanent record.
Hendrickson says it was fairly easy to get to the National Archives when a branch was located in Anchorage. But in 2014, despite public outcry, the U.S. Office of Management and Budget decided to move almost everything in Alaska to Seattle.
It was disappointing, but it was still manageable.
Now the National Archives could move again. The date hasn't been set yet, but the building in Seattle was deemed a high-value property by a federal committee that recommended selling it. This time, the collection could be sent to California and Missouri. And Hendrickson thinks that's separating Alaskans even farther from their story.
Much of Alaska's history is not here anymore.
We're a pretty new state. We need those federal records.
Karen Gray is the state archivist. After the close of the Anchorage branch of the National Archives, 5,000 boxes of territorial court records were transferred to the state. But Gray says many noteworthy items, such as Bureau of Indian Affairs and Bureau of Land Management records, aren't here. She says that's a problem because some federal policies in the state are still being discussed.
Correspondence relating to the establishment of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That's still very important today.
So are documents that detail the creation of National Forest in Alaska and case files from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Gray seems a little exhausted as she runs down the list.
I did make a frustrated shrug. You hope that when our historical records move, that somehow there's a different way to access them. And it seems so easy to say, oh, digitize it and put it online. But it's not that easy.
Gray says this latest announcement, the National Archives would be moving, caught her off guard. She found out just weeks before a final decision was made. And many elected officials are also wondering why the federal government decided to proceed with no public input. Senator Lisa Murkowski and Senator Dan Sullivan signed a bipartisan letter questioning why more stakeholders weren't in the loop. Richard Peterson wonders that, too. He's the president of Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, and he's concerned about what could be lost.
There are historical documents, things where the government has made significant promises that we want memorialized, that we, you know, when we need to hold them accountable, that we have access to.
Back at the museum, Steve Hendrickson unlocks a door leading to a large, well-ventilated space where most of the museum's collection is kept. There's one particular spot Hendrickson has been spending a lot of time.
This is just a really large cabinet that has these wide, flat drawers that have our collection of ceremonial robes.
Hendrickson would like to know more about the weavers who created these robes, woven in the Chilkat and Raven's Tail tradition. He's helping curate a new exhibit to be displayed in the summer.
We're hoping that our show will inspire young people to take it up.
Some of the details, like photographs and names, were documented by the Indian Arts and Crafts Board, a federal program created in the 1930s. But Hendrickson hasn't been able to make it to Seattle to do the research. If the National Archives move even farther away from Alaska, he says those types of trips will go from being infrequent to becoming nearly impossible. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI, home of double unlimited mobile and internet, offering connectivity to communities around the state. A full list of services and store locations can be found at gci.com.
And by Artinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Ardinger's, 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Eating fish can literally save lives. More after this.
The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association is offering drill conductor training in Kodiak on February 28th and 29th. Sign on at amsi.org.
Premature birth is the leading cause of death for children under 5 years old worldwide, accounting for nearly 1 million deaths annually. Eating seafood or marine oils can significantly reduce that number. The life-saving ingredient? Omega-3 fatty acids. That's the main finding of a new Cochrane review of 70 studies worldwide that included nearly 20,000 pregnant women. It showed that omegas from marine sources reduces early premature birth by a whopping 42%.
The effect really has to be strong in order to see it in a Cochrane review. And I am very impressed that it has come out as significant as it has.
Dr. Tom Brenna is a professor of pediatrics, chemistry, and nutrition at Dell Medical School at the University of Texas. Research on marine omega-3s and pregnancy has been going on since at least 1992, he says. Brenna calls the formal medical collaboration and conclusions in the Cochrane Review a blunt instrument.
The number of studies and the number of women studied is large enough so that it is very difficult to imagine that future studies, no matter how they come out, are going to affect these results.
Premature babies are at higher risk of a range of long-term conditions, including developmental delay, learning difficulties, and visual impairment. Brenna says marine-based omega-3s also improve those problems.
Many of us believe that omega-3s are important for continuing development of the neural system and of the eye.
Brenna says a challenge now is to translate the research findings on preventing premature births and other positives into health policy and wider educational outreach.
I think we have a major effect here that ought to be heralded from the rooftops.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Welcome to this noon edition of the Island Messenger. It's 34 degrees in Kodiak, a 30% chance of snow this afternoon, overcast skies and a high near 35, northeast winds 25 to 30 miles per hour, increasing to 35 to 40 miles per hour, a winter weather advisory continuing from tonight through Tuesday. Tonight, snow mainly after 10 p.m., areas of blowing snow after 7 p.m., lows around 33, northeast winds 35 to 40 miles per hour, increasing as high as 55 miles per hour tonight, a 90% chance of precipitation, and about an inch of snow accumulation possible. Tuesday, snow before 10 a.m., rains and snow between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m., then rain in the afternoon. Areas of blowing snow in the morning and highs near 37. Northeast winds 40 to 45 miles per hour, gusts again as high as 55. A 90% chance of precipitation for tomorrow and less than half an inch of snow accumulation possible. In Anchorage right now, it's 5 degrees and fair. This afternoon, sunny with a high near 16. Northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Quick look at the marine forecast. From Marmot Island to Sitkanak, there's a storm warning tonight and Tuesday. Today, northeast winds of 35 knots increasing to 45 knots in the afternoon with seas at 15 feet and freezing spray. Tonight, northeast winds of 55 knots, seas at 29 feet with snow and rain. Chiniak Bay has a storm warning tonight and Tuesday as well. Today, northeast winds of 25 knots increasing to 35 knots in the afternoon. Seas at 8 feet, building to 13 feet in the afternoon with freezing spray. Tonight, northeast winds of 40 knots increasing to 50 knots after midnight, seas at 20 feet with snow. Marmot Bay has a gale warning tonight and Tuesday. Today, northeast winds of 30 knots with seas at 7 feet, building to 12 feet in the afternoon with freezing spray. And tonight, northeast winds of 45 knots with seas at 18 feet. Shelikov Strait has a storm warning through Tuesday. Today, northeast winds of 50 knots, seas at 12 feet, building to 20 feet in the afternoon with freezing spray. Tonight, northeast winds of 55 knots with seas at 22 feet. Looking at our tides for today, well, actually, first, today is the 24th of February. Sunrise this morning was at 8:21 a.m. Sunset tonight will be at 6:27 p.m. That's 10 hours and 11 minutes of daylight, which is 4 minutes, 56 seconds, excuse me, more than we got yesterday. The record high on this day was 54 degrees in 1936, and the record low was zero in 1975. Okay, now for tides. High tide for Kodiak will be coming in at 2:22 p.m., 8.97 feet. Low tide will be out at 8:48 p.m., negative 0.5 feet. Over on the west side, high tide's at 2:55 p.m., 15.52 feet. Low tide will be at 9:19 p.m., negative 1.28 feet. A public service announcement from the Harbor Master. The National Weather Service is expecting strong winds and heavy snow this week. So the Harbor Master's office is requesting vessel owners and caretakers to come to the harbor and ensure that your vessels are secure. Replace worn or parted lines and add fenders if needed to prevent rubbing or bumping against the floats. The Harbor Master thanks you. Community announcements for today. The Public Library Dinner and a Movie tonight at 6 p.m. The movie is I Am Not Your Negro, based on the unfinished manuscripts of author and activist James Baldwin. I Am Not Your Negro follows the lives and assassinations of three major civil rights figures. This event is free. You bring your dinner and they'll make popcorn and show the movie. Doors open at 5:45. Show starts at 6. The monthly meeting of the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center Board of Directors is scheduled for Tuesday. That's tomorrow. Meeting starts at 6 p.m. and it's open to the public. Kodiak City Council is holding a work session on Tuesday as well. The meeting begins at 7:30 p.m. In the Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room. That work session is also open to the public. You can call the city clerk's office for additional information, 486-8636. City Council is holding a regular council meeting on Thursday, February 27th, and that meeting begins at 7:30 in Borough Assembly Chambers. Also open to the public, and KMXT will broadcast that meeting live. The Future City Fire Station Replacement Project Steering Committee is holding a meeting on Tuesday, February 25th. That's tomorrow. The meeting will begin at noon in the City Conference Room, 710 Mill Bay Road, room 116. That meeting is also open to the public. You can also call the City Clerk's office if you have any questions. Senior Citizens of Kodiak is holding a regular monthly meeting on Friday, February 28th at 1 p.m. in the Center's Multipurpose Room. Also open to the public, and for more information, call 486-6181. Finally, the Rural Alaska Honors Institute, or RAHI, is accepting applications. RAHI helps rural and Alaska Native juniors and seniors learn what it takes to succeed in college. Accepted students will spend 6 weeks, May 26th through July 10th, at UAF's Troth Yeda campus, earning up to 11 college credits, exploring Alaska's interior, and gaining volunteer experience. The program, including airfare, is free to students, and applications are due on March 1st. For more information, you can visit the RAHI website, uaf.edu/RAHI. That's all I have for you for today.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.